You're listening to the HDB podcast, farming news and stories from across the UK.
Former American President Abraham Lincoln once said that the best way to predict your future is to create it. Nowhere is that more relevant than on a dairy farm, where the results from today's breeding decisions won't be fully realised for several years and will continue to affect the herd well beyond that. Wouldn't it be great if we had a crystal ball to look into the future and predict how productive our cows might be, or how resistant they are to disease or other health conditions? Well, fortunately, HDB's work on genetics enables farmers to do just that, and farmers who've embraced them have been reaping the rewards ever since. I'm Alistair McLaren, and I spoke with Andy Rutter from Claydon Farm Partners to understand how he makes his breeding decisions and the impact it's had on his herd. Welcome, Andy. So could you tell us a little bit about yourself and about the farm?
So my name's Andrew Rutter. I started milking cows when I was 10 years old, and I was lucky enough to work on a lot of different dairy farms before I went to university. I went to Harper Adams, I got a degree in animal science, including a year out in Canada, which I enjoyed because it gave me a different insight into sort of different ways of managing cows. After finishing, I went 2 years managing the Deerhaven herd just to the south of the Wirral, and then 18 years then working at Genus, where I was buying the bulls. And then we made the decision 18 months ago to come home to the family farm where I work in partnership with my sister and my parents. We milk just shy of 400 cows with followers, so there's about 320 followers on the bank at the moment. An all year round, pure Holstein herd. And we're not beholden to pedigree, but you know, that's certainly something that's very interesting to me, and we try and make a profit from that.
Great. And the herd, is that fully housed or are you partially grazing?
The farm's called Clayhanger Hall Farm, so it gives you an idea what the soil condition is like. We do graze, but we do have a 200-day winter. It's a really good farm for growing grass. Unfortunately, you just can't turn out too early in the spring, and you certainly can't have them out late in the autumn. Certainly, with a year like this, they've been in, well, early on in September and housed right the way through now until we do first cut.
So effectively, you've gone from sitting behind a desk advising other farmers about their breeding decisions to getting hands on yourself. How did that transition work?
I loved and embraced the challenge. It certainly was challenging. There were some bits that I felt like I'd missed out on 18 years of things like developments in medicine. It was a steep learning curve to get myself back on the track. You know, a lot of work with the vet and advice on that side. The breeding bit is my meat and drink, if you like, and I still love doing that part of it. It was then starting to do far more hand-on work with the day-to-day management of the cows. I guess our family sort of splits itself up quite neatly. My dad knows so much about the farm that he's pretty much the farm manager. And my mum and my sister do all the book work and that side of it, with some milking as well from my sister. And then I sort of manage the cows themselves. The breeding bit, you know, I found very easy. Some of the other bits have certainly been a little tougher to get back into the swing of things, but hopefully we're starting to get somewhere near now.
You're obviously able to bring a huge amount of breeding knowledge and expertise to the farm. So what's gone well and what would you do differently?
When we look at the cows, I guess the starting point was I came back and stepped back a little bit and looked at, you know, what the cow we had, and I guess trying to think forward about the sort of cows we wanted to milk going forward. When I was working in my previous role, you know, I spoke to my dad a little bit about breeding advice, but because I wasn't hands-on with it, I didn't feel it was my place to be telling them which bulls to use. It was only really when I've come home fully that I took on full responsibility on the breeding side. So it's a little bit of sort of taking stock of the cows we have, and the type we've got in the herd is fantastic. You know, they're very typey, very good udders, good legs and feet. But looking forward, you know, you start to question whether we need cows as big as we have them. And certainly, I think we can get a lot more production out of our cows. So those, I think, would be my breeding goals, really. Get that control of size, reduce the size of the cow, and get more milk out of them. So driving up efficiency, if you like, per cow. And then a big concentration on the health rate. So anything we can do to reduce involuntary culling and make the decision about why the cow leaves the farm, our decision rather than she calls herself out, is key. And as we start to see the very first heifers start to come through, you know, we do see a big step up in production. And I guess in hindsight, if I'd known what I was doing, I would have been far more aggressive earlier on with the sort of genetics we've used, because that's been a real difference in terms of what we see day to day with the cows we see. The type is really ingrained in the herd. So I still look at type, don't get me wrong, but I concentrate more on specific traits that are going to have an impact on milk ability, functionality of the cows, rather than type per se as what. Years ago, I grew up in the show ring and we were told what a cow looks like. Whereas now I'm far more a believer of form follows function. And if you put the right traits in, the cow looks like what she looks like. And we work to that rather than, I guess, a true type model, if you like.
Okay. And just filling in some of the blanks there. So you're talking about upping production. What sort of levels are you getting at the moment? And just interested to know what type of contract you're on as well.
We sell to Arla all year round contracts. We do get bonuses for volume. We don't get paid for percentages, but we do get penalised if we drop below a certain level. You know, in my previous role and role today, I still put an emphasis on components, because you never know when your milk contract's going to change. And the contract can change far more quickly than you can change your breeding decisions. So I like the cows to be as future-proof as possible. That said, we know we're paid on litres first and foremost. So rather than getting too hung up on percentages, I put a lot of emphasis on the kilos of fat and protein. Those would be key drivers for the decisions we make on the bulls. You know, we put big emphasis on milk. Milk per cow per year is just touching 9,000 litres, which is great. I'd like it to be a little more, but I don't think there's any farm in the country that wouldn't say the same. So it would be very rare today that I would use a bull that was less than 700 kilos of milk. So I tend to look at that PLI ranking and then put a big emphasis on production after that.
And just before, you mentioned that looking back, you'd potentially be a bit more aggressive in your breeding decisions. Tell me a bit more about that.
Yes, the biggest, I guess, the revolution in the breeding world, certainly in the dairy world, has been the advent of genomics in recent times. And it would be one of those things where we wanted to see how it worked. You know, we're British, so we're, by our very nature, we want to see that it works rather than putting too much investment in it and then finding out something doesn't work. So I guess we sort of test the water a little bit and see what happens. As time's gone on, genomics has more than proven itself capable of the promises that it promised, if that makes sense. You have to use genomics properly. So you can't use a genomic bull the same way as you would use a proven bull. There's a higher risk in a higher risk reward. So you have to blend the bulls you use. You know, we would typically be selecting 5 to 7 bulls per proof run to come into the herd and use, whereas the old days of a proven bull, a bull might last in the flask for a year. You may only use 3 or 4 bulls in that year. And that's something that's very much changed with genomics. Plus, as new bulls come along, I want to be aggressive with them and move on to the next highest bulls, because that's how I see we're going to drive our profit forward with the cows through the genetic elements.
Now, I think I understand it right that you used AHDB's herd genetic report as helping inform your decisions. How does that help and how do you use it?
I would tend to be looking at it quite often. It's a great starting point to sort of see. I mentioned when I started off, it was looking at what have we actually got in the herd? What are our strengths? What are our weaknesses? It's a really good way of highlighting, you know, firstly, if you look at the herd itself, as you look at particular age groups, you can start to hone in on what strengths are improving, what looks like it's weakening, and certainly things that you want to keep in the herd or things you want to concentrate on for that next generation. I also really like seeing how our herd ranks against the percentiles out there, because it tells us a little bit about, you know, how much could we achieve if we put certain breeding goals into our bull selection criteria. You know, what differences could we make if we selected certain bulls and the impact it would then have on our future. I'm competitive. I see how our herd's performing and I kind of want to be the best. The reason being, you know, it's drilled into me in my previous role, but ultimately history has told us that improvements in profitability, around a third to a half of improvements in margins, is down to breeding itself. So if we're breeding the right bull and putting the right genetics into our herd, we're going to drive profitability up very, very quickly, comparatively cheaply. You know, if you compare the cost of semen against all of our other input costs. I think the input cost for semen and the AI is roughly around 2% of your outgoings compared to feed and all the other bits that only contribute the other half to two-thirds of our improvements in margin. So I put a lot of emphasis on that breeding side because I think, well, I've seen it firsthand with the herds I've visited over the years. The ones that are really performing well are the ones that have the tools within the cows to reach those sort of levels. You know, it's much easier to manage cows if they're designed to be managed, you know, at a high level of performance.
And I guess ensuring you've got the right cow for your system is really crucial. And AHDB, I know we offer bespoke indexes, whether you're a spring or autumn calver or all year round. So I presume you're using the Profitable Lifetime Index?
Yeah, I use Profitable Lifetime Index. And that's an interesting point because I do flick the herd between PLI and Autumn Calving Index for a number of reasons. Firstly, to sort of see, you know, how we would be performing on that level if in the future we decided to change to a block calving system. It sort of keeps you on your toes with the sort of genetics you've used. Again, how future-proofed are you? And it's also, the ACI is really interesting because it puts other breeds on the same base. I said we're a purebred Holstein herd, but that's not to say in the future if a crossbreed came along opportunity that gave us the sort of goals we're looking for in terms of production and health rates, I'm not adverse to saying we would try that, and the ACI is a really good way of comparing and then contrasting those different breeds to see if it is something that would suit what we're trying to do here at Clayhanger.
And you mentioned there that you're on clay soils, so that you haven't got that option to exploit grazing at home, so in effect you're operating more of a autumn block type herd, would that be fair?
Yeah, if we went to a block calving herd, it would, the system and the farm that we have means that, you know, the autumn block would really be the only relevant option for us. So that's why I would look at the ACI rather than the SCI. But as we said, PLI today is absolutely the perfect starting point, if you like, for our index.
Now, there are other indexes available around the world, EBI in Ireland and Dairyworth over in New Zealand. Would you ever look at those, or would you ever think that UK farmers should look at those?
It's a really good question. I've always been brought up, and if there's a bull you're selecting, you should always have a look at country of origin proof as one of the tick points to see if that bull really suits you, because sometimes a conversion can over or underestimate him. It sort of gives you a sense check on how good that bull is. I'm very, very nervous about using overseas indexes, the overall custom index, if you like, the EBI or the TPI for selection over here, because ultimately we're a UK herd working under UK conditions, selling to a UK contract, and only the PLI index or SEI or ACI get anywhere close to really reflecting that in terms of the weightings on the index. TPI or EBI are designed for their relevant farmers on their relevant milk contracts, etc. So, and their own goal traits. Using them purely as selection tools would make me nervous, and certainly something that I personally wouldn't use.
Now, looking at figures is an important part of business, but how do you actually see whether your approach is working on farm? Are there any results you're seeing after being back on the farm for 18 months?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because the genetics bit can bubble along in the background and you don't pay it too much attention with everything else going on with a hurly-burly of managing cows. But it is really interesting if you run, you know, we ran a genetic audit on the herd and it showed what the performance against the genetic potential of our cows, and then actually what that did in terms of returns, how those cows performed, how easy they got back in calf, how did they test for cell count, fat, protein, etc. To be honest, we found that genetics are underestimated, and a lot of things to do with that, you know, low heritability, the way we manage our cows has a big impact. But if you put your cows all on the same system, you know, it is surprising about how well certain bulls perform, or daughters of those bulls perform on those traits. And conversely, if a bull is poor for certainly some of the management traits, you really see it in the daughters. You know, that gives me a lot of confidence in the genetics we're selecting. And certainly as we drive our farm forward, that's going to be key to it.
Great. And finally, What would success look like to you?
I always find that a very difficult question because I don't think I'd ever really be happy. Success for me is continual improvement in the herd. There's always something to learn. There's always something that we can do better. I'm a big fan of visiting other farms, learning from other people's experiences. I guess a constant rate of improvement would be my success, rather than an end goal. We're a closed herd here. We don't buy any stock in for health reasons. So basically, I've got to work with what I have. And I worked out that if I use the best bulls from now on, using the generation interval, I should be in the top 2% in the country. But I've got to pick the right bulls every time. So no pressure, but that's my first goal. So 20 years, I've got plenty of time to work out my mistakes, my successes in that time.
Brilliant. Andy, thank you ever so much for your time. It's been absolutely fascinating. Best of luck for the future.
Thank you very much.
For any farmers out there wanting to know more about how genetics can help their business, visit ahdb.org.uk/breedingblocks. On there you'll find useful tools and resources, case studies from other farmers and details of the workshops we're running in your area. I'm Alistair McLaren. Thanks for listening.
Visit ahdb.org.uk for all the latest news, research and information, and follow us on Twitter at @thehdb to stay up to date.